So we are in our last full, one book. We're actually right smack dab in the middle. It's only a three-week series that we're going to be talking about Peter. Our Christmas series is going to be based out of the letters, but a little bit different than the way we've been doing. So since we finished the story earlier this year, we've been looking at different letters. These are called epistles. We're finishing up with what are called general epistles. We looked at James and general epistles are typically named after the author rather than the recipient. In the pastoral epistles, Paul wrote to Timothy, and the name of that letter was Timothy. And Paul wrote to Titus. We didn't look at that book, but we talked about it, that Paul wrote to Titus, and the title of that book was Titus. James wrote to the general group of churches, and the name of that book, or the name of that letter, was James, named after the author. So 1 Peter, 1 and 2 Peter, who do you think wrote those books? Peter, yes, of course. And this is Peter, this is the rock. Sorry, Dwayne Johnson, Peter had it first. That's where Peter is Petros, that means the rock, and it was given to him by Jesus, our Savior. Here you go, here's your name, Simon, I'm going to call you the rock, Peter. And so this is that Peter. This is the Peter who denied Jesus three times. It was reinstated as Tony talked about last week, as far as, feed my lambs. And so that was this Peter that we are reading words from, who traveled with Jesus, was in the garden with Jesus, saw the transfiguration of Jesus. Any of the things that you see connected to Peter, it's the guy that wrote these letters. And so we're reading the words from him. And he's writing to Gentiles, just so we get a quick look at the audience, people who had come from a background of not quite the Jewish faith, not quite the background there, but typically the Gentiles, which is kind of interesting. And when you look through Acts and see Peter's awakening into the Gentile world, and that the gospel was meant for them. And so we see that throughout the book. So that gives us a little bit on the audience. But a big part of the book, of really understanding what 1 Peter is about, is that the big overall umbrella is Peter is trying to encourage Christians who are going through suffering, times of suffering, hardships, difficult times, persecution. And so that's the big umbrella of 1 Peter is how to endure, how to go through suffering. And suffering is actually going to be our topic next week as we finish the book up. But last week, as Tony started us off in chapter 1 of Peter, talking about the joy of our salvation, and that's part of that goes up underneath our, to sustain us, the joy of our salvation, that'll sustain you through a lot of different hardships, a lot of different difficult times, a lot of persecution. If you just connect with the joy of your salvation and the joy of serving and being involved there. And holiness is another topic that comes up through 1 Peter that to kind of support that understanding of here's how you endure suffering. And that's part of what we'll be talking about today. So last week, to kind of bridge from last week, the main verse that Tony used was 1 Peter 8 and 9, chapter 1, 8 and 9. He says, Peter says, though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. For you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. And that's what he talked about, is that joy of the salvation. So then when we go down to verse 13, there's a therefore. That therefore is there talking about this joy of the salvation, this salvation that you received, this acceptance into God's family. Because of that, therefore, Peter says, with minds that are alert and fully sober, set your hope on the grace to be brought to you when Jesus Christ is revealed at his coming. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. Say those three words with me. All you do. That's a big blanket statement. That's huge. In all you do, be holy. For it is written. So if it's not, strong enough just coming from Peter, Peter's going to say, this is from the Lord. Be holy because I am holy. Kind of a New Testament version of thus saith the Lord. Be holy because I am holy. So because we've received salvation, we have a certain way to live now. We have a certain lifestyle. We are to live in a holy manner in all we do. And then Peter will bridge this section into a section where he talks about all sorts of different relationships that we have here on earth. But the first relationship he describes is our relationship with God and how that should function, and that that should really govern all that we do, everything in our life. So if we are to be holy in all that we do, holy because God is holy, then let's write this down. Our relationship with God is the number one governing principle behind how we handle all, everyone say all, that was not very encouraging, all, because you know where this is going, all other relationships. Our relationship with God is the number one governing principle behind we handle all other relationships. Will you have rewarding relationships in your life? Absolutely. Yes, you will. That you have relationships that are comforting, that are encouraging, relationships that you seek out, that you put into, that you enjoy. I've got a number of people here in the church just this morning. I got another note of encouragement from a couple in first service that have just become quite the encouragers. And I've got just a little stack of notes and letters from our friend. And And that's just encouraging. You're going to have relationships like that. You're going to have people like that enter your life. Will you have costly relationships? Yes. Yes, you will. You'll have abusive relationships. Now, I'm talking about just all levels. I mean, you've got kind of top shelf, which is awful, but then you've got relationships that are mildly abusive, but it's still an abusive type relationship. You'll have a destructive or draining relationship. You'll have relationships that you'll be forced into having. Like work relationships, or even, need I say it around Thanksgiving, but family relationships. They're your family. You have to have some sort of relationship with them, and they're not easy. They're difficult. They're draining. Well, speaking of easy, will you have easy relationships? You're shaking your head. Most likely you won't. Even the ones we deem easy, they're still going to have their share of struggles. They're going to still have their share of difficulties because we're humans. It's difficult to have relationships. And there are times when it's a little more easy, and there are some relationships in, you know, relative to others that these are easier. But really, all relationships take work. All relationships are going to have their share of friction, their share of conflict. So whether it's a relationship that requires a lot of effort or a relationship that requires little effort, it would be wise of us to have a single governing principle as the foundation to how we handle all of our relationships. That simplifies it quite a bit. So in all of our relationships, our relationship with God is the number one governing principle in how we handle those. All of them. God expects, let's write this down. God expects the high standard of His holiness in our life. Be holy as I am holy. Peter says, be holy in all you do. My holiness, regardless of how pitiful it is sometimes, my holiness should reflect His holiness. That's the goal of it. We are to be holy because He is holy. This is what God expects of us. This is the standard. This is the measurement. This is a tape measure we use on our life. This is the measuring stick. This is the ruler we use to measure in our life. This is where the little marks on the door frame are. They're not comparing ourselves to others. The marks on our door frame, the measuring stick, the ruler we use in our life, we measure ourselves against God, and that's it. Against His holiness. Be holy because I am holy. We need to be careful when we try to compare ourselves to others. Peter says, since you call on a Father who judges each person's work impartially. We talked about that in the book of James, how God does not show favoritism. He is impartial. So we know that God judges each person's work impartially. So live out your time as foreigners here in reverent fear. So as Christians, we should measure our behavior, our attitude, our actions, our intentions using one ruler, one measuring stick, one tape measure, and that is God's holiness. Be holy because I am holy. Don't compare yourself to others. When you talk about relationships, that really, really, really puts you in dangerous territory for having relationships with other people. It's hazardous to your relationships to compare yourself to other people. Don't base your behavior on what other people do. Don't excuse your actions because, well, everyone else is doing it. And this sounds like the type of thing that we say to our kids, isn't it? And sometimes as adults, we need these very words spoken into our lives as well to remind us, because we end up falling into the same patterns in the same areas. And really, don't we want to inspire, don't we want to aspire to a higher level of living, to a higher level of doing things? I mean, rather than comparing ourselves to other people, isn't it a more positive challenge to measure ourselves against God's holiness rather than the holiness of someone sitting beside you or near you or around you? I mean, isn't that a greater challenge? And if you're gonna go for top shelf, go for top shelf. If you're gonna shoot high, aim high, right? And as Christians, that's kind of what God is saying. Shoot high. He's our most important relationship. When we elevate the relationships of others around us up to the place where we compare ourselves and measure ourselves, we've elevated them to a place where they shouldn't be. Elevate God and His relationship. He is the most important relationship you have. And measure yourself against that and where you stand with Him. God desires high standards of His people. And I know for me, reading that verse, that verse is a tough verse to read. Be holy, for I am holy. And I'm thinking, immediately in my head, I'm like, I can't do that. I can't live up to that. You know, and I'm a preacher. A man of the cloth, as they say, you know. But think about what that says. Let's reverse our thinking here. And I need you to join me on this, because I don't think I'm the only person that reads that verse and goes, I don't think I can do that. That's tough. That's too high. I want you to think about what that is saying to you about what God thinks about you. Would He ask us to do something that we can't do? That would be torturous. That would be cruel. This is God, the genius behind everything good. This is our pure and holy Father in heaven, and He believes in you. He believes that you can live that way. He believes that you can accomplish great things. Otherwise, why would He ask that of you? If He didn't believe that you could do it with His help, with His holiness living inside of you. So being asked to live holy as He is holy, it's not a burden. It's an enormous compliment from your God. I think that's awesome. Peter says, since you call on a Father who judges each person's work impartially, live out your time as foreigners here in reverent fear. For you know that it is not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. Through Him you believe in God, who raised Him from the dead and glorified Him, so your faith and hope are in God. So let's write this down connected to that thought, that God has invested at a great cost into our life so that we would live a full life. God invested into our life His only Son. We were redeemed. That means we were purchased. We were bought back by Jesus' blood. Not by things like silver or gold, but by God's own Son. That's how valuable you are. That's how much you mean to Him. And we were redeemed away from the empty way of life that we had before, which means if you were redeemed from an empty way of life, we were redeemed to a full life. We were redeemed to live a full life. And this is God's example of how to pursue relationships in a good, positive way. And I ran out of space in the bulletin to be able to have this. Otherwise, this would have been a couple of blanks in there. But the idea that when God approached a relationship with me, when He approached a relationship with each and every one of you, when He approached a relationship with mankind, He saw value in us, and He did His part to make our life full. You can really just bring it down. He saw value in us, that we were worth something to Him, and He did something to make our life full. We've got some relationship struggles in our house right now. Jesse's grandmother got diagnosed with dementia, and it got bad quickly enough that the safe thing to do, the right thing to do for her was to put her into a nursing home because she wasn't taking her medicine. Her levels were all everywhere, so that was the best thing to do for her and in that case, in that situation. Now, she had three cats that were her babies, and she loved them, and so she... We were asked to take one of the cats, just one, so thankfully not all three, but to take it and either care for it ourselves or to provide a good home for it. Now, we have two cats. All we wanted was two cats. We're happy with two cats. But now we have three cats. And our cats don't get along with the new cats. It's awful. This new cat, he's a wonderful cat. He's so loving. He purrs louder than any cat I've ever heard. It's like a Harley cranking up when he starts purring. And he's like dog-like. He'll meet you at the door. If he could wag his tail, he would. He lays in the kitchen when you're cooking dinner. He has no spatial bubble, which with a human-cat relationship, that's kind of unique and kind of interesting, exciting, whatnot. But for cat-to-cat relationships, not good. Our cats need their bubble. And so this cat, he just kind of, and he's sweet and nice. I think he's missing a little, you know, he's just not bright. Because he'll get close to our cats. And as he gets closer, they start hissing and growling. And one of our cats snorts when she hisses. It's the first time we've ever heard her hiss in the time we've had her. And he just keeps coming. He's like, doo, 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 and they're sitting there hissing. And so we've gotten a water bottle out to squirt him because I don't want any cat fights, you know, and I don't want anybody injured and whatnot. We've been trying to take all sorts of precautions. And it just has not been working out. Our cats are not being a good example of how to pursue a relationship. They see, in fact, it's quite the opposite of how God has pursued a relationship. And for some of you, that would make sense because I'm talking about cats. Because they're from the devil, some people believe. That they see no value in this new guy, and they're not doing anything to make his life full. And so it's been a mess. It's to the point where even my wife has started telling our boys when they're bickering, she'll say, "You're acting just like the cats, hissing and growling. Why can't you just get along?" So we're looking for a home for Buddy. Yesterday, I put an ad up on Craigslist, and then immediately I got emails from people saying, "Don't do that. Don't put free to a good home," because there's people out there, and I never knew this. Some of you guys might know this. People will torture them. They'll buy them to train fighting dogs, or they'll take them because you're saying free to a good home, and they'll train fighting dogs with them. Or if they're like, you know, small enough, this cat's too big, but you know, if they're small enough, they'll say, "Oh, free hamster. Oh, great, great." And they'll take them home, feed them their snake. And I didn't know any of this stuff. So I immediately pulled the ads down. I thought, okay, we can't go that route. So if you know anyone that wants a cat who isn't going to train fighting dogs or feed them to their snake, you know where to send them. But my point is that my cats are a bad example of how to handle relationships. And we laugh about that, and we think, "Well, that's cats, ha, ha, ha," you know. But really, sometimes we don't pursue relationships a whole lot different, right? When it turns on us, we are very unhealthy in some of the ways that we pursue relationships and handle relationships. God is the example to follow. He saw value in us, and he put forth the effort to give us full life. So right after Peter talks about our relationship to the Father, he branches right into talking about various other relationships, and I'll do my best to keep it snappy. That first part was super important to get that relationship together. He moves, first he talks about our relationships with each other, the church. He says, now that you have purified yourselves by obeying the truth, so that you have sincere love for each other, love one another deeply, say deeply, from the heart. So our relationship, so inside the church, we're talking about Christian siblings. I'm just going to write that down. Inside the church, Christian siblings, we are to love each other deeply from the heart. This group of people, the people in this room, the people that are associated with this church, the people that have committed their life to Christ and committed themselves to being members here together, this is where the image and the behavior of Jesus Christ's act on the cross should be most visible, most clearly seen, and that is in our lives and how we interact and react and spend time with each other. It should be most visible among this group of people. Because our Christian brothers and sisters should receive deep love, and we should reciprocate deep love. And when you love someone, you leave yourself vulnerable. And that's why it's so hard to love. Because when you love, you leave yourself open. You leave yourself vulnerable. I mean, look at God. Look at how much he loved the world, and look at how vulnerable that made him. And he sent his son, and we see how they treated him on earth. So loving people means opening up. It means when you love someone, you're more vulnerable. And when you love someone, the deeper that love, the more vulnerable you are to them. Church, we should be able to love each other deeply from the heart. We should be safe to love like that. This should be a place where that is a safe place to be that vulnerable, to love that deeply. We cannot involve attitudes or actions that threaten this. Peter says, "For you have been born again, not of perishable seed, but of imperishable, through the living and enduring word of God." And then as you turn the page into chapter 2, Peter says, "Therefore, rid yourselves," and look at this list, this little vice list here. Every one of these are threaten the vulnerability of having a deep love among Christian brothers and sisters. He says, get rid of these things. Rid yourselves of all malice, of all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. So let's write this down. Don't feed attitudes and actions that threaten this love for each other. Don't feed it. Don't feed things that are going to threaten that. Malice, deceit, hypocrisy, envy, slander. We're all on the same team. We are all part of the church. We all make up the church, every one of us. I've got a picture, and I should have maybe done a PowerPoint of this, that one of my boys drew of our family, and it's got all four of us little stick figures holding hands. And at the top it says, "We're all on the same team." But he can't spell. This was a couple years ago. And war is W-A-R. War on the same team. So it's kind of funny. But we're all on the same team. Pink Floyd once said that we are just another brick in the wall. How many of you guys remember that song? Love that song. That was presented by Pink Floyd as a negative concept. Sarcastic, you're just, you don't matter, you're just another brick in the wall, that's how society views you. Peter actually spoke these same words, but a completely different meaning. Peter speaks them in a tremendously complimentary, a tremendously, positive concept. He says, as you come to him, the living stone, talking of Jesus, the living stone, rejected by humans, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, like the living stone, like Jesus, you being made into Jesus' likeness, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. So let's write this down. We are all just bricks in the wall, and that's a great thing. We are living stones of a spiritual house. That's what we are, church. Living stones made into the likeness of Jesus. And out of these living stones, all of us sitting around here, out of all these living stones, we are coming together to build the spiritual house. Not a building. The church is not a building. The church is a body. It is a being. It is an essence made up of all of us. And we are all bricks in that wall. We are all bricks in that building. Living stones in a spiritual building. We, the church, are special to God. And we need to believe that about ourselves. We are special to God, and we need to believe that about ourselves. Peter talks in chapter 2, verse 9. I love this. And it's not individualized. It's collective. Notice his language here. He says, you are a chosen people, not a chosen person. You're a chosen people. This group, we collectively have been chosen by God. Not just you, not just me, all of us collectively. A royal priesthood, a holy nation. A few minutes ago in the verse we just read, he says you are a holy nation or a holy priesthood. Holy priesthood. And here he says you're a royal priesthood in a holy nation. So he's kind of expounding out something he's already talked about. A royal priesthood. We are all being built into this royal priesthood, this holy nation. This is who we are, church, collectively. Look around you. Look around the different people sitting around you. I want to see necks and heads moving. Look at your people around you. You are sitting among royalty. Is that amazing? You're sitting among royalty. You are among a royal priesthood. How often do we look at each other like that? Boy, we should. What would change in these walls if the church, this spiritual building, looked at each other, and that's what we saw through the glasses that we used to look at each other. We looked at each other and we saw a royal priest, a royal priestess, someone that's a member of this royal priesthood. That's who you are, church. That's who you're sitting beside. That's who you're sitting among. Look to another person. That person is a holy servant. A holy servant of God. Part of a holy nation of people. That person is part of that. And as you look at that person, think about that. They're part of that. Look to someone else. Look to another person. Now that person's got a lot of work to do. I'm just kidding. Everyone is part of this. Everyone is part of this. You are special to God. Regardless of how great they are at being a holy person, a holy part of the nation, regardless of how much they look like royalty or even a royal priest or royal priestess, regardless of how much they look like that, this is what God has given to us, church. Collectively, this is who you are when you are part of God's family. And we need to see each other that way. We are precious to God. It says, Peter continues, he said, God's special possession. That's you and me. That's all of us together. That you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. We are called out of darkness and into his wonderful light. And our reaction to that is to praise him. Amen. As a church, to worship side by side. And I don't have time to talk about the importance of the details of why it's important to gather together and to worship together. But just accept that it is important and we need to do it together. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. I love that. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Once you were a nobody, that's what Peter's saying. Once you were a not a people, but now you are a somebody. Turn to your neighbor and say, you were once a nobody, but now we together are the people of God. Turn to another neighbor. You guys are looking at me. Everybody look at, find a neighbor. Turn to another neighbor. You were once a nobody, but now we together are the people of God. See, and that's how we should handle the relationships that we have inside the church. To look at each other and think those things about each other. Now let's try and blast through this last section here of all these other relationships. How about those outside the church? Peter says, dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles, as aliens and strangers in other translations, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. So let's write this down. Outside the church, leave evidence of God's light by good deeds. And Peter is just repackaging what Jesus shared with them. You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before men so they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. We're the light of the world, church. We are the salt of the earth. Our relationships with those outside of the church, we should reflect God's personality. We should reflect who he is. We are the salt of the earth. We are the light of the world. We are the representation of God to those who are outside the church. We should live such good lives that if they're going to accuse you of something wrong, they're going to have to make something up. That's how we should be living, church. How many of us think about our outside relationships like that? And we should. Let me exhort. It's a stronger word than encourage. I want to encourage, but it's more of a, you know, encourage, but a command based on God's word. Be the salt. Be the light. Ask yourself, maybe during our prayer time here in a few minutes, maybe that's the question you need to ask yourself. Am I being the salt to those outside in the world that I have outside this group, outside this body? Am I a light to those people outside the church, my neighborhood, my work, even my family? Sometimes your family's not always Christian. So ask yourself that. And Peter moves on to relationships with people that have authority over us. He said, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as a supreme authority or to governors who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. A little bit of a recap there. So let's write this down. Talking about people who have authority over us. We are to submit to people in positions of authority over us. And the first group here, he mentions two groups. We're going to get onto another group in a minute. But the first group he mentions is the government. We are to honor the governor is what he says. And he goes into some pretty strong details on this. So we can go and write that down. The government. If you're speeding and an officer pulls you over, submit to his authority. Don't give him a hard time. You were doing wrong. Submit. If you're running your mouth in front of a police officer and they tell you to calm down, don't reach inside your jacket. Don't reach behind your back. That's a great way to get shot. Those guys want to go home to their family. Correct, sovereigns? They're going to do what it takes to make sure they go home to their family. Submit to their authority. They're there for a reason. If you're in court, then show honor to the judge presiding over your case. Submit to their authority. Now, with that said, I don't believe that Peter is telling us to forego our moral code of principles given to us by God in order to submit to the authority above us. Peter says, live as slaves of God. We submit to God's authority first, and then we submit to the authority that God has placed above us through governors and positions of authority in our government. Peter himself, in Acts chapter 4, when the government in his area, when they told him to stop talking about Jesus, they commanded him to, Peter said, I'm not going to do that. Peter's not being a hypocrite saying these things. We have to understand that there's a balance between this. We submit to the authority above us. We're not going to give them a hard time. We're going to submit to them, but we're not going to do so if it means foregoing God and submitting to his law and his commands and his righteous decrees. Do you get me? Okay, so I wanted to, that needed to be brought to light in the midst of that subject. So for the general good, for general living, it's best in that relationship to submit to their authority, but not in cases where it contradicts what God's commandments have asked of us. Peter then talks about slaves. He says, slaves, in reverent fear of God, submit yourselves to your masters, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. principles given to slaves and servants in their time are very easy to apply to our relationship of employer to employee for masters to slaves. They're not exact, but when we see things in the Bible, in the New Testament, talk about slaves, a lot of the slaves were more of a servant-oriented thing. It's not quite the slaves that we experienced in America, the awful, you know, horror that was, but this is a little bit different. And so we can look at this as employee. So we can look at this as employment, that authority over us. And I want to talk about two forms of suffering that happens. We have just suffering, and I'm not talking about just suffering. I'm talking about just suffering. Suffering you deserve. Take what's coming to you in your workplace. A lot of people will complain about just suffering. If you did a crime, do the time. You know, if you deserve it, don't complain about that. If you messed up, your supervisor, your manager, the owner of the company, whoever, they're coming down on you, just take what's coming to you. Face the music, suck it up, pay the piper, whatever term you want to use. If it's something you deserve, then as a Christian, understand, you know what, I messed up. I'll suffer just suffering. But there's also unjust suffering. And this is what Peter focuses on. He alludes to the just suffering, but he focuses more on unjust. He says, "For it's commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because they are conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and endure it, this is commendable before God." So there is unjust suffering. And the wisdom there is don't retaliate. Trust God. And I understand this is talking about slaves and masters, and we're applying this to the employee-employer. So there's a little bit of adjustment there as we apply it. But Paul brings up the ultimate example of Jesus. He suffered unjustly. How did he handle that? How did he endure that? What did he do? Peter says when they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. But when he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. So Jesus put his trust in God. He didn't retaliate. And that's where I'm getting that part. There is a difference between retaliation and repositioning. If you're in a place of employment and it's just a miserable relationship and things aren't working well there and things aren't there, I'm not saying that the Bible says you have to stay there. You can reposition. But I am saying that as a Christian, we need to be mindful that people are watching. And when we retaliate in certain ways, that can be seen very negative. Trust God. Don't retaliate. If you need to reposition, reposition. Just a take on applying servant and master relationship to employer employment. So then he moves on to marriage. And this section in chapter 3 is tough advice to the woman who is married to an unbeliever. And I've had it in my time as a minister, I've had many women come and ask, "What do I do? How do I get my husband to come to church? How can I make him come to church?" You know, just different, you know, terms like that. What can I do? I've been trying to get him to come to church, and he won't come to church. I ask him every Sunday. I wake him up on Sunday morning. I jump on the bed. I set 4 alarms. You know, what do I do? What can I do? And I have to take him to 1 Peter chapter 3, and I say, let's just read this, and I'm going to let you digest this and take it for yourself, because this is wisdom from God's word. And I'm a guy, I'm a man, and it doesn't feel as appropriate as you just dealing with it between you and God. And I think it's great, great wisdom, but it's not easy. It's not easy wisdom. Peter says, "Wives, in the same way, submit yourselves to your own husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives, So is that, let's go back up to the slide. When he says, wives, in the same way submit, he says in the same way. So he's talking about in the same way that you would submit to the government that he was just talking about, in the same way that slaves would submit to their masters. He's saying in this same way, and that's really strong, strong language. In this same way, wives, and he's talking about all wives at this point. And then he narrows it down as we go into the next part, that if, you know, submit yourselves to your husbands, if any of them do not believe the word. So he's going to a narrower group. They may be won over without words by the behavior of their wives when they see the purity and reverence of your lives. So Peter backs this up with some great logic, very simple, but you know, very intimate, very warming, very, a lot of value is given in Peter's explanation here. First of all, let's go and write that down. Wives, submit to your husband. And then let's write this down. It is connected to purity and reverence, because it is out of obedience to God. There's a beauty there. There's a lot of value there. This is what it reflects. It reflects purity and reverence. And it's connected to that because you're obeying what God has said. You're obeying what God has told you to do. And regardless if your husband ever responds to that, you know that you're doing right according to that. That it is a representation of purity and reverence. Peter continues and just says some beautiful things. He says, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as elaborate hairstyles and the wearing of gold jewelry or fine clothes. Rather, it should be, and he's not saying don't do that. He's saying, you know, don't abandon it. He's just saying your beauty should come from something other than that. Wear the gold. Do the things. You know, some of you guys definitely keep wearing the makeup. Sorry, I had to throw that out there. But no, he said, but don't let your beauty come from something more meaningful, more deep. Rather, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty. How much money is spent in advertisement to sell women unfading beauty? Yeah, maybe it's Maybelline. You know, maybe it's right here in 1 Peter chapter 3. Maybe that's where it is. You want unfading beauty. He says it's right here. The unfading beauty of a gentle, quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. Ladies, let me, and I know some of you deal with this. And you're here today. And you're here without your husband. And you want your husband here with you. And you want your husband in church with you. And maybe you live like this, and maybe you deliver deliver this purity and reverence, and you have an unfading beauty by this type of quiet spirit that Peter's talking about. And you know what? Maybe your husband will never respond to that. Let me encourage you this morning by the words of God's Bible right here on the screen, right in front of me from his word. This is of great worth in God's sight. If you never see reciprocation from your husband, please know God sees it as a worthwhile cause. God sees what you're doing, and he believes in you, and it's valuable to him. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to adorn themselves. They submitted themselves to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her Lord. I'm still waiting. 17 years. I'm waiting for that title. You are her daughters if you do what is right, and do not give way to fear. So let's write this down. It reveals the unfading beauty of a gentle, quiet spirit. Peter continues, and he talks to husbands. You know, he doesn't let us off the hook either. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner. And I want to jump on that word before you start getting walls built up. Weaker is it's a precious thing. Things that are fragile. Think of China. You know, you keep it in a china cabinet. You pull it out for special occasions. It's fragile because it's beautiful, because it's precious. I once heard a comparison in this passage of a fine little teacup, you know, a china teacup and a thermos. Both will keep your tea warm, both will keep your coffee warm. The thermos, you can bang around all you want. That's the husband. The teacup, that's your wife. Be considerate. She's not a thermos, guys. Be considerate. Be respectful. Treat her as precious. That's the message here. That's what Paul, or that's what Peter is saying to us. Treat them with respect as a weaker partner, as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayer. So husbands, write this down. Actually, everybody can write this down, but husbands, be considerate and respectful to your wife. Be considerate and respectful to your wife. Tons and tons of wisdom on relationships here. You know, and it all comes from building all of our relationships off of our understanding of our relationship with our Father. And the relationship we should have inside this room, the relationship we should have with those outside, the relationship we should have with their government, the relationship we should have with employers, the relationship we should have inside our marriage between a husband and a wife. All of these things, all connected back to be holy as I am holy.